It's time to read the East Valley News. Thank you for joining me. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Today we're going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe, including Phoenix begins new search for a police chief. Three Ahwatukee athletes earn distinction. Kyrene School District policy puts Trump administration bullseye on district. And AZ Hugs founder sues Tempe city manager. Our first article from the Ahwatukee Foothills News, Phoenix begins new search for a police chief, by Paul Mariniak. Phoenix is going back to the drawing board in a search for a new police chief after announcing last week that interim chief Michael Sullivan withdrew his candidacy for the job. Sullivan's surprise announcement in a city release came as Arizona Senate President Warren Peterson announced he is working with the U.S. Department of Justice to end its investigation of alleged civil rights violations by police officers, negating the possibility of putting the department under control of an outside agency beholden to the federal government. In announcing Sullivan's withdrawal from a process that officials hoped to conclude this week, City Manager Jeff Barton also said the city will begin a new nationwide search for a chief, apparently killing the hopes of three other finalists for the job. Sullivan said his last day will be Friday, April 18th, and Barton said until a permanent successor is named, Executive Assistant Police Chief Dennis Orender will lead the department. Orender will not be a candidate for chief, Barton said. Sullivan was appointed interim chief 3 years ago and had been the chief of Baltimore Police, which under a federal consent decree that city agreed to following allegations of police misconduct by the Department of Justice. When I accepted this role, the department was under a Department of Justice pattern and practice investigation and facing significant challenges, Sullivan said in the release announcing his resignation. Throughout my tenure, I've worked diligently to navigate that process while focusing on crime reduction, strengthening community trust, and building a culture of continuous improvement. I'm incredibly proud of the progress we've made as a department and of the dedication demonstrated by our officers and staff. Neither Sullivan nor Barton said why Sullivan was resigning, and the city manager did not say why the other three competitors for police chief were being rejected in favor of a new national search, especially since they had been presented only 6 weeks ago as finalists and appeared at a town hall for citizens to get a closer look at them. Barton had been expected this week to name a new chief. In announcing the Sullivan's resignation, the city also said, the search for a new police chief will resume immediately, building on months of community engagement and feedback. The city previously conducted stakeholder listening sessions with residents, business leaders, labor groups, neighborhood organizations, and other key stakeholders to gather input on the qualities and qualifications most important in the department's next leader, it continued. This feedback, along with input from the City Council and various departments, as well as information gathered through the public survey, will help shape the selection process and ensure the next phase of recruitment is aligned with community values and priorities. Barton added that the city is committed to finding a highly qualified and capable individual who will serve as an exceptional leader for our community and our department. The initial recruitment process provided us with valuable insights from residents and stakeholders, and we'll use that guidance to move forward with confidence. In the past 6 months, the police department has worked collaboratively with other city departments, including the Office of Homeless Solutions, the Fire Department, the Office of Accountability and Transparency, along with representatives from the Chief's Advisory Boards, with a focus on seven specific areas, the memo said. Those areas are use of force, interactions with individuals experiencing homelessness, stops, searches and arrests, protecting First Amendment rights, interactions with people with behavioral health needs, interactions with youth, systems of accountability. The DOJ capped a 3-year investigation into the police force by issuing a 126-page report last June that claimed that Phoenix police routinely engaged in a pattern or practice of unlawful conduct. Specifically, it accused the city and the department of using excessive force, including unjustified deadly force, unlawful detention of homeless people, and the unlawful disposition of their belongings, discrimination, minorities in law enforcement activities, violating the rights of protesters and people with behavioral problems, and deficiencies in policy, training, supervision, and accountability that contribute to Phoenix PD and the city's unlawful conduct. Such accusations in other cities have resulted in the municipalities entering years-long consent decrees that have cost tens of millions of dollars. Phoenix spent well over $10.6 million during the three-year probe, according to administration reports to council. Maricopa County has spent over $300 million in the last 10 years under an ongoing consent decree it agreed to in order to settle a federal lawsuit involving unconstitutional activities by former Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Although the majority of Phoenix City Council has indicated it will not agree to a consent decree, its worries could be over if State Senate President Warren Peterson gets his way. Days before Sullivan's dramatic resignation, Peterson's office issued a release stating the Gilbert Republican is working with the newly confirmed U.S. Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, Harmeet Dhillon, to end the U.S. Department of Justice's effort to impose a destructive and costly consent decree on the Phoenix Police Department. Peterson had met March 12th with Trump administration justice officials and last week wrote a letter to Dhillon complaining about the Biden administration's disturbingly biased and outright factually inaccurate report against the Phoenix Police Department. He echoed complaints by some city council members and organizations representing officers that the DOJ based cherry-picked fewer than 5% of the thousands of cases handled by police. For example, DOJ's conclusions about excessive force came after deconstructing only 7 of 149 officer-involved shootings that occurred since 2018, according to Paul Sheldon, president of the Arizona Fraternal Order of Police. Peterson wrote to Dhillon, "The DOJ's report contained a host of biased and inaccurate findings against the city's police department, putting Phoenix on a path for a destructive and costly consent decree that would discourage our brave men and women in blue from reducing crime and protecting innocent Phoenicians. It would also have a tremendous impact on the agency's ability to recruit and retain enough officers to serve our communities. To avoid this disastrous outcome for innocent and law-abiding men, women, and children of our community, I respectfully ask your office to rescind this report." He quoted Maricopa County Attorney Rachel Mitchell, who previously wrote, "Here's what the DOJ report did not include, a full set of facts, nor did it ask the right questions. But that's not how the DOJ operates. Instead, they use bits and pieces of information to claim patterns or practices of misconduct with little or no supporting evidence." Peterson also cited Daryl Kriplian, president of the Phoenix Law Enforcement Association, who said, "The DOJ has a 30-year record of consent decrees. Not one can be touted as a success. Sure, some cities are forced to obtain equipment for their police departments, but as a whole, they are unsuccessful. Consent decrees are successful in spiking violent crime and police department budgets and enriching the individuals chosen to serve as oversight monitors," Kriplian said, pointing to the fact that it is not the DOJ that monitors consent decrees, but private law firms that rake in millions from the cities subjected to them. "For years, the Phoenix Police Department has been crippled by a vindictive arm of the federal government, looking to find fault with the brave men and women who serve our communities to appease radical activists targeting law enforcement," said Peterson. Thankfully, the Trump administration has already signaled its unwavering support for law enforcement, and I'm heartened by Assistant Attorney General Dhillon's track record in these areas. I'm hopeful that we can work together to end the witch hunt against the police department and release their officers to thoroughly protect our citizens from criminals seeking to cause harm. That was Phoenix Begins New Search for a Police Chief. Our next article, Three Ahwatukee Athletes Earn Distinction, by AFN News staff. Track and field legend Cliff Flash Santoro is giving kudos to three Ahwatukee residents on the Arizona Masters track team, who stood out among men and women from 130 different countries at the World Masters Athletics Championships in Gainesville, Florida, for a week of competition in all events in indoor track and field. At these competitions, one can witness incredible age-defying feats, such as a 90-year-old woman pole vaulting, a man in his 80s doing the sprint hurdles, and men and women in their 60s running faster than most high school athletes, Santoro said. And he said the same dazzling display came from the three Ahwatukee residents. "You'll find a group of people who love to run, train, and compete," Santoro said. "While starting out as average, everyday runners, they have found such a love for it in their later years, and they've made it a lifestyle. It's become an important part of how they define themselves, and with some encouragement from coach, three brave representatives from the team signed up to compete at these championships. Little did they know, they would achieve results far beyond what they could have imagined." He said Todd Blatty, 61, ran the men's 60-64 3,000 meters, a distance of almost 2 miles, in a mere 10 minutes and 15 seconds. Todd finished sixth in the world with his amazing performance, flying past some of his top-ranked American compatriots. His age-graded performance would have been good enough to qualify him for the NCAA Division II National Championships. Sylvia Quick, 65, ran the women's 65-69 800 meters and 1500 meters in 3 minutes and 7 seconds and 6 minutes 18 seconds, Santoro said, adding, "Those performances, plugged into the age-graded calculator, would be the equivalent of her qualifying for a high school state class championship in many divisions, in Arizona and around the USA. Sylvia snagged a pair of sixth places." Santoro said, in the sprinting arena, Lydia Christensen, 66, took on the 60-meter, 200-meter, and 400-meter races, all either session or master's bests. Like Todd and Sylvia, Lydia heads to the gym to cross-train several days a week to supplement her run training and absolutely crushed her goals and expectations. The trio looks ahead to next year and possibly competing at the next World Championships to be held in Daegu, South Korea. That was Three Ahwatukee Athletes Earn Distinction. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Did you know that if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org? Then click on the link for broadcast info and audio. Today we're focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm Bill Carney, continuing on. Kyrene School District Policy Puts Trump Administration Bullseye on District, by Paul Mariniak. A proposed policy by Kyrene School District to address teachers and other staffers' social-emotional well-being has put the district on a collision course with the Trump administration and State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Horn. And the outcome could cost the district $1.5 million this school year, according to Horn. At issue is a policy that was introduced for adoption at a later date, possibly next week, that is aimed at ensuring each staff member feels safe, has a sense of belonging, and is supported to find purpose and fulfillment in their profession. That policy includes three words that have been anathema to the Trump administration for weeks: diversity, equity, inclusion, or DEI. Almost since the inauguration, the administration has been killing millions of dollars in grants and other funding and terminating untold numbers of federal workers that are associated with DEI purposes or activities. And the proposed district policy makes no secret that Policy 1-204, Equal Opportunity, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, outlines Kyrene's commitment to value, respect, and celebrate diversity in the workplace. The Governing Board study session, April 8th, came a few days after Horn issued a news release about a letter he sent to school districts across the state, asking them to reply by April 14th. The lengthy letter outlined the U.S. Department of Education's new guidance on federal civil rights law and directs to a test they will follow federal civil rights law and avoid the use of diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. Schools that do not comply with the federal guidance risk losing federal funding. Asked by AFN if the proposed Kyrene policy might be in conflict with that guidance, Horn said on April 9th, "Well, the federal government is going to cut off funds to people who don't give a statement that they're not doing DEI." He then said in an interview, "They've always been defiant," referring to Kyrene. He said in the past, he has sent letters to every school district in Arizona annually asking whether they're doing DEI and CRT. CRT refers to critical race theory, a subject largely taught in some colleges and universities that asserts racial bias is inherent in many Western institutions to benefit white people. Horn went on to say, Kyrene officials not only didn't answer his past requests, but they proudly announced that they were proud not to answer. "They've been the only district in the state who did that," Horn added. "I was on the March on Washington where Martin Luther King gave his famous speech that we should judge by the content of our character, not the color of our skin." Horn went on, "Well, the whole DEI-CRT movement has gone the opposite way. They want to emphasize racial divisions, and I think that's morally wrong, and it's a distraction from academics." He also said, "It would not surprise me if they have their federal funds cut, and if they do, it's going to be the fault of the school board and the superintendent." Horn ratcheted up his warning in a news release on April 11th that held up Kyrene as an example of the fate districts risk by ignoring the new federal guidance on DEI and schools. Titled, "Schools on Notice as Kyrene Will Lose $1.5 Million with Vote to Defy Federal Guidance," his release erroneously stated the district had already adopted the policy and that all Arizona districts and charters are on notice to take this matter seriously. Kyrene and any district or charter that is not taking the federal DEI guidance will lose their federal dollars, the release stated. The U.S. Department of Education has been abundantly clear with its most recent guidance against the use of DEI language in schools. Federal law and the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution are clear that no person shall be discriminated because of race, skin color, or ethnicity, and this guidance aligns completely with my philosophy. By contrast, the use of DEI programs does just the opposite and promotes racial discrimination. Schools ignore the federal guidance at their own peril. This is not an empty threat, and districts and charter schools need to treat it seriously. The release also stated that his department has sent a federal certification letter to all districts and charters with a request to respond by April 24th, and that their failure to respond will result in the department putting a hold on funding by the close of business on April 24th. The release also echoed what Horn told AFN 2 days earlier. "The most interesting philosophical divide in our country right now is between those like me who believe in individual merit and those who want to substitute racial entitlement," he said in the release. "DEI is all about racial entitlement. The problem with racial entitlement is that it does nothing to promote hard work, conscientiousness, or creativity. If those advocating for it succeed in having it replace individual merit, we will become a mediocre third-world country," it continued. "China will become the dominant power." Reaction to Horn's threat was varied. After it was issued, Kyrene Governing Board held an unscheduled emergency closed-door meeting Friday afternoon to confer with its legal counsel. Kyrene Superintendent Laura Tonez issued a statement that said, "The Kyrene Promise pledges to provide welcoming, inclusive learning environments in which every student is honored, valued, and feels a strong sense of belonging and purpose. We stand behind that commitment. All Kyrene policies, including policies around inclusion and social-emotional wellness, are in compliance with state and federal law, including Title 11 of the Civil Rights Act. I encourage anyone with questions to read the language in Kyrene's policies, some of it pulled directly from Title 11. Over the weekend, U.S. Representative Greg Stanton, whose district includes Kyrene, issued a statement condemning Horn's threats to score cheap political points, withholding money that Congress appropriated on a bipartisan basis. It's a boneheaded move that'll only hurt Arizona students. All Horn's DEI witch hunt turned up is Kyrene's plan to invest in teacher health and well-being. On Monday, State Attorney General Chris Mays advised districts to basically ignore Horn, stating he is choosing to engage in ideological nonsense at the expense of students and teachers, and that he has no legitimate role whatsoever in blocking the funding. Kyrene Governing Board President Kevin Walsh said, "On April 8th, Kyrene approved the first read of a staff social-emotional wellness policy full of inclusive, not discriminatory language. That policy has not yet been adopted. If it does get adopted, the board will stand behind it, and we do all of our policies, every one of which is compliant with all state and federal laws. We remain committed to ensuring all of our students and staff feel safe, welcome, and a deep sense of belonging in Kyrene." Stating the $1.5 million represented the lion's share of withheld funds, Horn's office said the $1.5 million covered Titles 1, 2, and 4A. Those funds support help for students from low-income homes, teacher recruitment and development, and programs enhancing education generally. Kyrene Assistant Superintendent Chief Financial Officer Chris Herman months ago had put the total amount of annual federal funding the district receives at about $4.5 million. It is unclear if Horn's figure reflects what remains from the district's federal allocation for the current school year and whether Kyrene's adoption of the policy would also impact next year's budget. That budget, Herman had noted in a separate portion of the study session, currently reflects a $2.2 million spending gap as the result of enrollment decline. The proposed policy states, "The Kyrene Governing Board and the district are committed to creating a welcoming community and encouraging individual engagement to cultivate a sense of belonging, empathy, kindness, respect for others, acceptance, value, safety, visibility." It also commits to providing resources for the social, emotional, physical, and mental health needs of all staff. It also seeks to encourage open and honest communication across all levels of the organization, where every individual feels heard, valued, respected, and connected to their peers and the district. And it promises to prioritize collaboration between leaders, staff members, and peer colleagues to share tools and supports that are available, and provide opportunities for staff to provide meaningful input on district wellness supports. In outlining the policy, Deb Spurgeon, Kyrene's benefits director, said the staff policy was a natural outgrowth of a similar policy for treating students and board adopted last year. In meetings that began last November, a committee of 14 employees used the student policy as a template and then made adjustments based partly on an employee survey. Of 2,104 staffers invited to participate, 1,406 or 67% replied. Among the survey's findings, 90% of staff feel like they have someone they can confide in at work. 82% feel engaged at work, and 70% feel they belong at their school or department. The only response below 50% involved 22% of respondents who almost always feel overwhelmed at work, according to Spurgeon. The key top recommendations were mental health resources, improved work-life balance, manageable workloads, and better communication, Spurgeon said. Other recommendations were to value and recognize staff particularly through acting on staff feedback and to receive more support from administrators and teams. Calling the policy the framework we're coming to, Spurgeon explained, "We don't consider this as a finite project. It's actually a beginning and a roadmap, and just a step on that. So we're excited that it now sets the groundwork for us to move forward and do even more in the space of wellness for employees." Several board members applauded the proposed policy. Cedric Collins noted that he represents many teachers through the Arizona Education Association. "This is very important," Collins said. "I actually think Kyrene is the only district that is doing this right now. I mean, I'm trying to encourage other districts to do this because it's very important." He cited teacher burnout, a lot of other things I'm not going to say here, and praised Spurgeon's reminder that this is not a finite project. Tonya said that the policy sets the direction for our teams to come back together and figure out how to implement. So, for example, when the board adopted the diversity, equity, and inclusion policy, when they adopted the social-emotional learning policy, those were new frameworks that our district had not had in place before. In diversity, equity, inclusion, the superintendent added, "We actually now have some procedures around curriculum that align to that, and so I anticipate in the coming year or two, procedures will follow this policy once it's been formalized by the board for us to put into place." That was Kyrene School District policy puts Trump administration bullseye on district. And finally, AZ Hugs founder sues Tempe city manager, by Lee Chappelle. Austin Davis, the founder of AZ Hugs, who was cited 34 times from December 2023 through May 2024 for feeding homeless people in city parks without a special event permit, has filed suit in U.S. District Court against Tempe and city manager Rosa Inconsulti, alleging violation of his constitutional rights. Davis is joined in his suit by Ron Tapscott of New Deal Meal, the Jane Parker of Hope, Arizona. Tapscott, 78, was warned on January 19th and then cited on January 26th on suspicion of providing food at Moore Park without a permit, a misdemeanor. He has a pretrial conference at 1:30 p.m. on April 23rd in Tempe Municipal Court. Parker, 77, stopped serving food in parks because she said she cannot afford the required permit, which she estimates would cost her organization $5,000 a year. Like Davis, she had provided food to homeless people for years before the city began citing her. Pacific Legal Foundation, a national nonprofit law firm that defends Americans threatened by government overreach and abuse, is representing Davis, Tapscott, and Parker. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic, coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.